From KCRW, I'm Bob Carlson, and this is Unfictional. Unfictional is a program of stories and personal documentaries told like a journey, radio movies, inner lives. And even in a place as isolated and uncompromising as Alaska, some of the most profound moments can happen in a garden.
I could talk with the plants. If other people didn't want to be around me, it didn't matter. You know, I could be who I am in the garden.
Ember always knew who she was, even when those around her said she was wrong. But she'd been through beatings and car crashes, wrestled with addiction, and all it did was build an armor. From KCRW, it's Unfictional, and her name is Ember.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
From KCRW, it's Unfictional. I'm Bob Carlson. This is a short and small story, but small stories can sometimes hit the hardest. It's about a personal journey of finding yourself, having the confidence to know when you are seeing the world clearly, even when everyone around you says you're wrong. It's Unfictional, and her name is Ember.
You know, for a long time, I'd take little post-it notes, and I'd write things like, I love you, and leave them on the mirror. Or I'd hide them in places. I'd write little notes to myself and hide them in places where I'd forget. And then a month or two later, I'd find them, and I'd feel my heart open. Better to find joy and peace and contentment in yourself than to worry about what others think of you. There's a lot of bigotry in Alaska still. My power is just claiming the reality that I experienced. Kind of turned into a soaker, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, cheekies. My grandparents farmed pretty extensively on this land. Here's my grandfather's black radish.
There's some big purple potatoes in here.
Scarlet runner beans.
Cherokee Trail of Tears beans.
And these are hops. Growing up in this area was a really powerful experience. Powerful isolation, powerful solitude. You know, if you were depressed, it was powerful depression. Oh my goodness.
So, I got like loose leaf green, loose leaf black.
One of the things that led me to gardening was that I could talk with the plants. If other people didn't want to be around me, it didn't matter. You know, I could be who I am in the garden. When I was about 4 years old, I knew that I was female, but my external characteristics didn't fit into the definition that my parents carried for gender due to their religion and to their dogma.
Do you remember the first time that you told your parents that you were female?
Yeah, though it wasn't a very pretty story. I'm 4 years old and I'm being beat with a belt while some drunkard screaming, there's no way that your mother's womb could bear a faggot. And trying to like calm his animal rage, I'm screaming, but I'm not gay. You know, because I'm straight. And that just making him even angrier.
I didn't really have the time to hear what was being said. You know, it's like I'm me, but then I'm kind of forced back into being this other person, and then I'm me, and I'm forced back into being this other person, and I would flip-flop back and forth like a pendulum, you know, going male, female, male, female. In order to survive, I was going to have to blend in. It wasn't just coming out at such an early age, it was that I was consistent and persistent, but it was the wrong forum. My father was an alcoholic. You know, we're in the middle of an incredible amount of abuse. At a young age, I was taught to lie for my father. This is where the bruises came from. This is where the bruises came from. This is where the bruises came from. And yeah, no, I never crashed that bike. And so I learned how to tattoo, and I gave myself tattoos so that I could sink, I could hide inside of a male gender. It wasn't ever like a true desire on my part. It was more like putting on armor. In that era, and especially here in Alaska, it was an incredibly masculine thing.
How many tattoos do you have?
A lot. I've got a bunch. I ended up building my first tattoo machine. I pulled apart an old Bachman and took the motor out of it, and took an old Bic pen and pulled the ink tube out of it, and took a high E guitar string and sharpened it, heated up a little screw and set it into the gear on the motor, connect the wires, and zzz, you know, it worked. I was living authentically in Seattle. My dad called me. He's like, "You need to get to the airport." I'm like, "Why?" He's like, "Because I got you a plane ticket." "Why did you get me a plane ticket?" He's like, "Because you're a drug addict." I was like, "Are you kidding me? I'm not doing any drugs, for God's sakes. What the hell is this guy thinking about?" And of course, it had to do more with my gender orientation than anything. And this was when I was living on the street. So I was like, "Well, what the hell? I'll go back to Alaska." So I go hop on the plane, and my dad takes me over to this drug rehab place. You know, I pee and all this. They're like, "There's nothing in your system." The intake counselor is like, "Why are you here?" And I was like, explain the story. And she's like, "Oh, so the wrong person's here. So your dad needs to be here." And I was like, "Yeah, but, you know, if you were to tell him that, he'd probably explode. So I'm just going to come here, you know, every couple days, and we'll sit and talk and drink tea." And, you know, I was just wasting her time. And she called my dad and said, "Yeah, you know, your daughter's not a drug addict." And that made him blow up. He hung up instantly, and I knew he was on his way over there. And she saw the panic in my eyes. It was about a day before Christmas. I was 18. I just remember I got my ass kicked. So my grandpa put me in his car, and he drove me down to Homer, handed me $20, and drove away.
Is there a story behind the tattoo on your lip?
Yeah, it has to do with, how can you say, life as a mystical anagram. The English translation of the first word of the Bible is Genesis, correct? Okay, but the Aramaic word is Bereshit, so that's Beit Resh Alef Shin Yod Tov. So it can be broken down into Babo Rabban Asher Shemov Yeshua Taboro. So speaking about the idea of Yeshua, or the Messiah, in the first word of the Bible. we all have these personal lexicons or these personal definitions that we build up over our lives. If I say red, you may think of like candy apple red, I may think of ox blood, and we may never see it the same. What it reminds me is that I create what I speak. December 2nd, 99, I had taken all of my money, I was leaving. I just told my mom I was going up to Anchorage. And that was the first thing that I heard. I was like, my God, you look like a fucking faggot. I'd already been saving up for, you know, my operation. I had tickets to Thailand. She drove me to the edge of town. I met some friends and we were going to go see Jello Biafra at UAA. You know, and these were friends that had known both sides of me. And then from there, I was leaving. And then we got into a car crash. I broke my back. It was a combined impact of about 100 miles an hour. The seatbelt chopped me in half. I lost 2.5 feet of small intestines. And that was that. I was in the hospital. He told me I wasn't going to walk again. I told him to screw off. They weren't my God. My mother was basically taking care of me, which meant that I was stuck in that male pseudo-psyche. And then getting myself off of the narcotics that they had me on was another nightmare. And because of the narcotics, there was this wall between me and myself. They dampened it all down. I became trapped in that pseudo-psyche.
How long were you on them?
About 10 years.
That's when you got married?
Yep.
Did you, starting your own family, improve your relationship with your parents?
No, I can't say that it did. Because it was all a farce. In the beginning of our relationship, you know, I was presenting as male, but throughout the entirety of the relationship, I would flip-flop back and forth like a pendulum. You know, my daughters have always called me mom. They've also called me dad. But only one of those I resonate to. Just saying. As soon as I got off of narcotics, holy crap. You know, it was like everything kind of comes back with a vengeance. My body just naturally started transitioning. There wasn't any controlling it. You know, my dad instantly, like, wrote me off. And I was like, you know what? I don't have to be a man for you. I know you wanted a son. I've never been your son. I've always been your daughter, and you know that. And then he tried to convince me that being on hormones, you know, was illegal and that I was going to end up in jail and all of these horrible things. He tried to talk to me on Christmas and called me son. And actually, it was my daughter that had answered the phone. And he was like, hey, is your dad there? And she's like, you mean my mom? You know, she sticks up for me. He's like, no, I mean your dad. You know, he's like being a total dick about it and making her cry. And I was like, look, dude, just don't call back ever again. Really. I finally just changed my phone number and just fuck him.
So these are the public greenhouses. Bananas there.
Yeah, what a space.
Beautiful, isn't it?
And how are you doing in school?
Doing great. I swapped from a Bachelor of Fine Arts to actually adding a Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering. I've been making friends, and everyone here only knows me as female. They don't know me any other way.
Yeah.
So it's much more comfortable. I've been on some good dates, I've been on some bad dates. But that's life, right? here's a good one. When you were young, you had a dream, and someone said, oh, that's stupid. So you put on armor, a mental armor. And as you go on through your life, you find that you've built up so many layers of armor that you can't even remember what the dreams are. And the neatest thing was that as I was stripping those layers away, I suddenly re-encountered the dreams that I had had in life.
You know, what were some of those?
Well, you know, I mean, funny things. One was, I know it sounds stupid, but I'd always dreamed of sitting at the edge of the ocean by myself on a full moon with a bottle of wine and a nice block of cheese and just sit there and speak back my love for myself.
Her Name is Ember was produced by Emrys Eller and Greg Eller. It was edited by Carla Green and Nick White. Please subscribe to Unfictional on Apple Podcasts, look for us on Twitter and Facebook, and find the archives at kcrw.com/unfictional. I'm Bob Carlson, the producer of Unfictional. The editor is Nick White. The associate producer is Carla Green. Theme music by Alex Weston, with music help from Joe Augustine and Narrative Music. And please join me next time for Unfictional from KCRW.